Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Beltway Blitz is going to be jam-packed. We've got three teams today for you that you care about all in one segment. So time it up, hop in the car, lunch break time. Get all the intel you need on those clubs. Nats start a series tonight in Miami. Byron Curran moments. The Redskins have re-upped with Matt Ioannidis. They're less than a week away from making the 15th pick in the draft. J.P. Finley of NBC Sports Washington this segment. But first, let's get started on the ice.
Capitals.
Caps Convo brought to you by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland or online at PVIPVI.com today. J.J. Reagan of the My Teams app of NBC Sports Washington is on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. J.J., doesn't sound like a suspension for Warren Fogle. I don't know if that's official. There's at least one report out there. We're waiting for that to be confirmed. What are you hearing and thinking?
I've seen the same report. I would be very surprised if there's a suspension there. The referees only deemed it worthy of a two-minute minor. I mean, it looks terrible, but it was a cross-check in the back, and I don't think it was that he caught Oshie in a defenseless position. I think it was Oshie turned his back to him because he was trying to block the puck away, as we see players do. So I saw it more as that. So I don't think he was unsuspecting or defenseless. It is a terrible hit. It is a terrible injury. It looked terrible, but I would be surprised if we see a suspension come from it.
NBA swingman Joe Johnson, Reagan, are the Caps in trouble?
I mean, you have to say they're in trouble now. I was hesitant to say that after Game 3. I thought it was just a bad game. They looked much better in Game 4, but mistakes came back to haunt them, and they ended up losing 2-1, and now all the momentum is on Carolina's side. And really, Game 5 is essentially a must-win for the Capitals because you don't want to go back to Carolina facing elimination, considering the way the Caps have played in Carolina. They just look like two different teams in Washington and in Carolina. So in that sense, they are in trouble. I thought for the most part they were the better team in Game 4. So as long as their confidence isn't shook too much, they should be fine. But now they have to deal with the loss of TJ Oshie, which is another blow, especially for a team that has scored only one goal in the last two games.
What will the top six look like on Saturday night tomorrow?
So I have to imagine that we're going to see the top line reunited of Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Kuznetsov, and Tom Wilson. The reason being is because when you look at the second line, probably the most likely candidates for the wing are Jacob Vrana and Andrei Burakovsky, and I would feel a lot better about that line having Nicholas Backstrom in the center sort of anchoring things there than I would with Evgeny Kuznetsov. You just don't know what that trio would bring. It would be a fast, very skilled line, but also a line that I think would be susceptible to counterattacks pretty significantly. So that would be my guess, but we're going to talk to Todd Reirden here pretty soon, and hopefully we'll get a better idea.
Australian comedian Jim Jefferies, Reagan. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys.
By the way, Reirden speaks at 1:15. He will address TJ Oshie's injury and timeline at that time. You will hear what he says first right here on The Fan. Let's talk some baseball.
The Nationals.
Byron Kerr with us of Masson Sports covers the Nationals for Masson. BK, a couple nice wins. Patrick Corbin was great yesterday. How good has he been? What an acquisition for the Nats.
Yeah, imagine where they were last year, and no offense to Gio Gonzalez, and thinking about Patrick Corbin and Dallas Keuchel in the offseason, Mike Rizzo certainly made the right choice with Patrick Corbin. Took advantage of a strike zone that was a little amoeba-like yesterday, but Jan Gomes said afterwards, hey, you got to go with it. Just like when you're a hitter, you got to suck it up when you get a bad strike zone. Corbin took advantage of nibbling on the corners and just had an outstanding start for himself, getting that first win with the Nats under his belt. And he's been really one of the best starters in all of Major League Baseball here in the first 3 weeks of the season. So you can put him up there with Max Scherzer at the top of the list for the starting rotation for the Nats. And what a find for Rizzo. It's huge for a starting lineup of pitchers that's already very good to add a player like Patrick Corbin.
Byron, if you do anything while you're in Miami, go eat at Yardbird, get the chicken biscuits, and thank me later. They also have the best Brussels sprouts I've ever had in my life. Anibal Sanchez, Caleb Smith, righty versus lefty. Sanchez has been very good for Washington. Look, you got to take two or three from the Marlins, but I want to tell Nats fans right now, they don't know a lot about Caleb Smith. This guy's the truth. Someone's going to trade for him this year as a frontline starter. 21 Ks, 17 innings. He's a lefty, and he is legit. He might be a number one in a couple years. They got their hands full tonight.
Yeah, I mean, this will be the best chance for the Marlins to get something going tonight. Smith, as you said, was very, very good already this season against the Phillies in the last game out. Only one hit in six innings, allowed no runs, and a 10-3 win. He's got a 2.65 earned run average, and he's the best thing going for the Marlins. And obviously, if the Marlins want to continue to fortify their system and get better for 2020 and beyond, you're right, Caleb Smith will be pitching for somebody else, maybe even the Phillies, later on in the season. They already have a nice relationship with the Marlins with the JT Realmuto deal. So this is the one the Marlins will hope to try to win, and that's why the Nationals have to be up to task tonight. You know, this Marlins team is absolutely the worst in baseball. They've lost 15 times already this season. They haven't even scored a run since Monday. That's 23 consecutive innings without anything coming across home plate. So any team that comes in here, Grant, in the National League East must win the series, because they're going to battle each other. The Mets, the Braves, the Nationals, and the Phillies are going to fight each other out in a dogfight. So when you face the Marlins, you have to take at least two out of three.
Byron, thank you, buddy. Enjoy Miami. I know it's hard, but please try.
This is a struggle. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, pal. There he goes. Redskins, please, Tommy.
Redskins.
Our buddy J.P. Finley covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. Jasper Parnevik, Finley, they extend Matt Ioannidis. I think everybody's universally lauding this move, right? Seems really good.
Yeah, there's nothing bad to say about it. You get the guy before he gets to free agency. You develop one of your own late-round draft picks. I imagine, you know, for all the talk of Jay Gruden being disconnected from the front office, Jay Gruden, this Matt Ioannidis is his guy. By all reports, Jay Gruden demanded they draft Ioannidis. He's got to be happy to see him get this deal done. And for a team that has let a lot of their draft picks walk, you know, this year we saw Preston and Jameson Crowder, and years past we've seen other guys just walk in free agency. It's got to be good for some of these young guys to see, hey, they will take care of some of us if we stick around.
JP, the draft is now 6 days away. Obviously, right now there's not a lot going on with Josh Rosen, but that's going to pick up late next week. What kind of chance do you give the Redskins to be in the mix heavily for him?
I've kind of stayed at around 1-5, 20%. That's where I've been for a while now, pretty much since the combine. I think Arizona's taking Kyler Murray, and I know that he was sick, and that was a part of why he didn't make the visit here, but I also firmly believe for him to not come visit the Redskins for a pre-draft visit when I believe the Redskins would be in the market for a blockbuster trade. We've seen that happen enough that to count them out on that kind of thing is crazy. Means that he's going to Arizona. That's a done deal. The Cardinals are not going to have Rosen and Kyler Murray on that team. It's just not going to happen. We saw how well it went having just RG3 and Kirk Cousins on the same team, let alone two first-round picks with big names and big expectations. I think the Skins will be in it. I don't know that they'll get him. I don't think the Skins want to give up their first-round pick, and I think you can make an argument why.
Hall of Fame pitcher Jim Palmer, Finley. Let's say they stay at 15. They don't trade it in the Josh Rosen the bidding, whatever, right? What can't they do at 15? What's something that you would say that's a bad move?
I believe the actor that played Harry Potter was called Daniel Radcliffe.
Correct.
I think you cannot take a wide receiver at 15. I don't think there's a guy good enough on the board to go that high. If you trade back to 21, 22, maybe you can do it, but this draft has a lot of good wide receivers. I think there's good players available in the bottom third of the first round and certainly in the second and third round, but I don't think there's a guy worth taking at 15. I know folks are really intrigued by DK Metcalf's size and speed, but he's 2 years away from being able to run NFL routes against press coverage. I think there are impact players available that can help you in 2019. And if you want to go development, then you develop a quarterback. You don't develop a wideout at 15.
JP, thank you. Much appreciated.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good Easter.
You too, man. Happy holiday to you. Have a good weekend. Sounds like the Giants are going to take a quarterback at 6. We can get into that next couple of NFL news and notes for you. As the hour continues, though, we are awaiting official word on Warren Fogle. Will he be suspended? We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're 6 days away from the NFL draft. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Get back to the Capitals coming up at the bottom of the hour at 12:30. Remember, Les Carpenter will join us to talk about the Redskins extension with Matt Ioannidis at 1. Brent Johnson, former Caps goaltender and analyst at NBC Sports Washington, covering the team throughout the playoffs, will be on the program at 1:30 today. A couple of notes on the draft coming down the pike. It seems like everyone who follows this thing closely and covers it for a living is now pegging the Giants as taking a quarterback at number 6. The only question is, do they go Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State or Daniel Jones of Duke? What if Jones came off the board there and Haskins actually fell out of the top 6?
I think two things are going to happen. One, I think Haskins won't fall out of the top 6. I think someone's going to trade. I think there'll be a move to be made because they realize we can get this guy.
So he'll be gone before the Giants pick at 6 then?
And I think Daniel Jones is going 6.
To the Giants.
I think that's what's happening. I think this Cutcliffe obsession, just because guys are in the room with the two Mannings, I bet you those guys would have turned out pretty well, by the way, even if David Cutcliffe wasn't there. Bet you Peyton still would have been pretty good. Bet you Eli still would have been a first-round pick, etc. But they like him, and he's their guru. So the idea that if you're associated with him, you're worth something. I think the Giants have the steamies for Daniel Jones. That's my little medium-sized boldness in prediction.
Their GM is Dave Gettleman. He is suddenly in control of the pick that is getting talked about more than any other selection in the top 10.
I'm just telling you, I'm not going to force a pick. You can't draft for need. You'll get screwed every time. You'll make a mistake.
Dave Gettleman is talking with the media. I love the comfort and just kind of like the colloquial style there, as if he's like having a conversation in his basement with one of his buddies.
Just two people at Queens on the front stoop going, what are you up to this weekend? Let me tell you, you can't just draft for need. You can't do it. If you do it, you're screwed.
I believe Murray goes 1 out of Oklahoma to the Arizona Cardinals. I'll be shocked if it doesn't happen. There's all of a sudden rumblings that maybe they'll do something else. Maybe they'll go Nick Bosa, the edge from Ohio State. I think that's just your typical pre-draft fodder, some smoke screens being shot up into the air. Are you with me on Murray to the Cardinals?
I think that's ultimately going to happen. I do, but people have acted like it's a done deal for months, and they're going to feel like they're right. I don't know that it's been that way, but I do think that ultimately is what goes down.
Second pick in the draft belongs to the San Francisco 49ers. They've got plenty of opportunity to improve, a bunch of different positions they can address. Nick Bosa, Joey's little brother, shut down his final season with the Buckeyes to ensure he was going in the top 5, is coming off the board right there, I think. He is widely considered a can't-miss prospect and a guy who's going to immediately make a defense more tenacious and able to get to the quarterback more frequently. San Francisco needs that. They also need a safer pick. Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch need a big season or else they're both going to be in trouble. Nick Bosa, too, makes, to me, all the sense in the world.
They've had excuses for their first couple years together, right? Their quarterback of the future has gotten hurt a couple different times, and they were digging out from the old regime, et cetera. But now it's one of those, hey, you guys have done this a while. You put your imprint on the organization. It's time to achieve a little bit, and that's as sure a bet to come in and help as there is in this draft.
I think the draft gets particularly interesting at number 3 with the Jets. Now, this is not necessarily where the draft's going to, quote-unquote, begin. I think it'll already have gotten underway because we're not really sure what the Cardinals are doing. And the 49ers, as I said, have so many needs, they could go in a bunch of directions as well. But the Jets, to me, would be wise to get themselves a edge rusher. And I think Josh Allen from Kentucky would probably make the most sense right there. I've seen maybe Nick Bosa falling into their lap. If something crazy happens at number two, it's unlikely. But to me, the thing that makes the most sense is Kentucky's Josh Allen to the Jets with the third pick, which then means the Raiders at four could get Quinnen Williams, the huge D-tackle from Alabama. And if you like Daron Payne here in Washington, or you think John Allen's been good, Quinnen Williams is better than both of those guys. He's going to go in the top five, and the Raiders might really luck out. They have not one, not two. I mean, this is a team that has a chance to make three picks in the first 30 selections. I think their third pick is at number 27. If they get Quinnen Williams to start their night, you almost can't screw up at that point.
Now, here's where I think the action is going to happen, either with the Jets or with Oakland, and they're going to get a Godfather offer from somebody. I don't know who it is. I don't know if Denver's going to move up. I don't know if Jacksonville's going to feel like they got to leapfrog the Giants to get their guy at the quarterback spot. I think one of these two teams that you just mentioned, the Jets or Oakland, can move back a little bit and still end up with one of those two guys just based on how these picks are going to shake out. Because the teams that will be right after them, Tampa Bay doesn't need a quarterback. The Giants do need a quarterback, but you'd be at risk then of losing either Allen or Williams if you move back 7, 8, 9, 10 spots. But if you move back a few spots, you could still get your man at a position that's not as needy as some of these other guys that were trying to get a quarterback.
This tweet came out 2 minutes ago. We're talking about the Raiders' three picks in the first 27 on the clock in the top five. This is from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. According to his sources, John Gruden and Mike Mayock, the head coach and the GM of the Raiders, have sent all the scouts home for the weekend, and they will not have them return until the draft starts. Because apparently they don't know who they can trust in their own draft room right now with leaks and information getting out. And I don't even know if it's about evaluations as well. I'll just read the tweet here. The belief is they don't know who to trust and wanted to clear the room. Maybe that means in terms of who's good at their job and who isn't. I think more importantly, it's probably a source thing and not knowing who's going to leak to different teams and let people know what they're thinking so that clubs can move ahead of them in the draft. So basically, this is going to be a two-man show. Gruden and Mayock will know what's going on, and nobody else.
That sounds really functional.
That sounds like Billy Costigan and Frank the Departed. What's Frank's name?
Costello.
Costello. Frank Costello and Billy Costigan and the Departed trying to find a rat.
He's like, in the old days, I'd kill everybody and move on.
I got a gnawing rat. Yes, Sitzens is written on the envelope that Mike Mayock's passing around right now in the front office for the Raiders.
First of all, oh my God. Second of all,
it's a show, bro.
Update your LinkedIn profile if you're a scout for the Raiders.
You're done.
Get that resume service ready.
You go.
Good googly moogly.
Three picks in the top 27.
Yeah.
To round out the top five, you got the Bucs on the board at number five. I think they could go Devin White, the linebacker from LSU. Although, kind of at that point, you're late enough into the draft. It depends what's there. But the Giants at six, as I said, that is, to me, the big key for the Redskins. They go quarterback. It changes everything for Washington. If they don't, then one of those QBs is almost definitely falling to the Redskins. Chance, obviously, the teams could trade up. My number one candidate for the Skins right now, ideal world, I'd be most happiest with, would probably be Montez Sweat, the edge rusher from Mississippi State. I would also be ecstatic with Brian Burns, the edge pass rusher from Florida State as well. I would do a cartwheel if you could somehow find Devin White into your building at number 15, but I think he'll be long gone, the inside linebacker.
Yeah, I think White's gone. I also look at the Michigan inside linebacker as well.
Gary?
In that spot. Yeah, Rashawn Gary. That's somebody that I think could be there. That's the edge rusher.
He's the end.
Who am I thinking of? The inside linebacker. Why am I blanking on his name? It's not Devin White. Devin Bush. That's a different player.
Devin Bush is the linebacker from Michigan.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I get a little fatutz with names, as you know. But that's another guy that I think might be there and might be a good
player. You want them to draft Kyle Bush or Kurt Bush?
I want Reggie Bush.
You want Reggie?
I want Reggie Bush.
George W.'s got a little game left,
doesn't
he? I
am available to be draft harassed.
Grant and Danny,
goodness gracious,
on the Fan next. Let's get into the Caps. They've got an optional skate ongoing. Let's take your temperature. Want you to choose a number on the nerves meter, 1 to 10. your anxiety, your fear going into Game 5 at home on Saturday night. You're listening to The Fan.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
In 13 minutes, just after 12:45, we're giving away two tickets to see the Nats take on the Padres April 27th at Nationals Park. A little over an hour from now, as we wind down the show at 1:45, we've got our tickets to the Redskins draft party at the Anthem to give out as well. If you want those tickets, you've got to be listening. I understand why Devontae Smith-Pelly is a Stanley Cup hero. He brought joy to me that I'll never properly be able to thank him for. He had me on the verge of tears at times during the postseason with happiness and exuberance and euphoria last year. But it really is amazing to see the reaction today to the news that the Capitals are recalling him. Talk about being a sports deity and an icon forever. I hope this doesn't come off as disrespectful. That's not my intention. But he is a fourth-line Jag throughout his career. I mean, he is just the guy in every way. He had 7 goals in a forgettable, mediocre, at best, regular season last year. He had an epic playoff run, and he gave DC something with his teammates that we hadn't had since the early 90s, and in the case of hockey in the Capitals, that we'd never had in 44 years.
Massive playoff goals. Massive moments.
One after another. 7 of them equaled his 82-game regular season in a 24-game postseason, including huge goals in the Eastern Conference Final and in the Stanley Cup. So I get the joy, and I get why people are so elated to see something good happen to Smith-Pelly, but he's not the answer, I don't think. I mean, you don't just plug him in on the fourth line to get 8 minutes in Game 5 on the ice, and that's going to fix or solve anything necessarily. Not to mention, think about this. What if he doesn't play in Game 5? He's getting called up to the roster. This is the equivalent of the Nats calling up a guy from the minor leagues after an injured player goes to the IL. That doesn't mean he's going to be in the lineup.
It doesn't mean Austin Williams is closing tomorrow.
Batting second. Now, maybe they call him up and they play him because Todd Reirden just decides, well, he had 7 goals in the playoffs last year. He had a great playoff run before he ever got here with a different organization. Maybe this is just a dude who happens to be Johnny on the spot in the postseason. Let's try to run that back. But if they make this decision based on what they made decisions all year about who is going to play, who is getting sent down, who is staying, they could give a sweater to Yashkin or to Stevenson or somebody else.
I mean, in the mid-90s, if you told Caps fans, all right, John Drews is coming back, they'd be ecstatic. They would do spin kicks because of that 14-goal run that he had, more than just about twice as many goals as he scored in the regular season. If you told Redskins fans, you guys, this is a big deal, but I don't know, pick it. Like Martin Mayhew is coming back to coach cornerbacks. People would lose their minds, right? Brad Edwards is now going to work with safeties because he was great that time for the Redskins. People lose their minds. It's why they tried out Doug Williams, as they do, because he brought us a Super Bowl 30-some years ago. If you do something great, you're going to be thought of as great no matter what. I bet you right now, wherever Rob Jackson is, some Redskins fans going, oh my God, you're Rob Jackson. Can I have a photo? Can I buy you whatever you want forever because you intercepted Tony Romo that time in that Sunday night game?
I'll bet you there is no one doing that.
Well, you know what I mean. Rob Jackson's fairly anonymous, but people still think of Rob Jackson as like a great player. They wanted him over, you know,
right?
They wanted to pay him instead of Ryan Kerrigan.
He had a great moment, and so people said this is the dude, right? Smith-Pelly didn't just have a good moment in a regular season game like Rob Jackson did. Smith-Pelly was one of the biggest reasons why the Caps won the Cup last year. This is not 2018, though. Everyone just wants to do everything the exact same they did last year. If you restart last year's playoffs right after the Caps had won the Cup, they may not win. In fact, they probably don't. There's a much better chance that they don't than that they do, and I think that's the part sometimes that's missed, particularly when it comes to hockey. I think you could say this about all sports. But the run happened perfectly. The bounces went their way. The puck ended up on his stick and not someone else's. I'm all for giving him a chance. If I'm calling the shots, I probably would give him a go, to be completely honest. But I just want to prepare people a little bit for the possibility, first and foremost, that he doesn't go. I feel like there's going to be some type of riot at Kettler.
We got to cushion the blow a little bit.
Everyone settle down just a tad. And the other thing is the idea that, like, oh, everything's fine. Oh, she might be out, but we got DSP back now. You are losing one of the best players on your team. You are gaining a guy that a few weeks ago the Capitals felt very confident allowing to play for the Hershey Bears because it wasn't going to make them worse at the major level.
They didn't call him up after the hat trick. They didn't call him up until a major injury to one of their top players. I don't know, man. I'm with you in the sense that everyone just assumes the Magic will be back. I get it. I get celebrating it because it was cool last year and you didn't expect him to do what he did. But expecting lightning to strike in the same spot is a little bit of a fool's errand, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody really thinks he's got another half dozen or seven goals in him. But maybe they think he could just do something to impact one of these games, and that's more realistic. Here's the question for you right now on the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines. Let's open up the phones. First time since the start of the show. Caps fans, no excuse not to fill the lines now. I want to hear from you guys after a huge game, a second straight loss, and one day ahead of a game five that's going to swing the pendulum in this round one series. This team won the cup last year, brought joy to this city that people my age had never experienced before, and now they are on the verge of having their backs against the wall in an elimination game, potentially, in the first round against a team they were heavily favored over. Meanwhile, their coach from a year ago, Barry Trotz, is already on to round two, sitting so calmly, comfortably, just waiting, getting his lines in order with the New York Islanders, getting healthier to see if he gets a crack at the Capitals. Maybe he won't even try to get any revenge if they can't finish this series now without TJ Oshie. 1 to 10, your level of angst and nerves and anxiety. 1 to 10, pick a number. 10 being as scared as you could possibly be. 1 being you couldn't be more calm. What's your number?
What would my fear be based on?
Your fear, I think, is based on the idea that you get eliminated in round one. You don't get out of this round.
It's not. And here's what my fear would be based on. My lifetime of not achieving. The galling, ridiculous, comical almost, if it wasn't so painful, exits in championship environments from DC pro sports teams. The anxiety I would feel is because it's happening again. Well, that's all taken away. The Caps won the Stanley Cup last year. I can't bring myself to have that level of anxiety where, oh my God, they're going to choke away again or something to that effect. That's not how it feels to me.
But I'm just talking about winning or losing this series in a vacuum.
And what I'm saying is my anxiety, I can't help but have that be part of it if that's what anxiety would be based on. I thought this would go 7 before the series started. I think it's going 7 now. I think they win on Saturday. I think they lose when they play game 6. And I'm hoping they win a game 7. I've always thought this was going deeper than people thought. So we're still on course for that. So my anxiety is probably a 3.
Okay.
4, just because Carolina's pretty good. We
so
knew
I
that.
Picked the Caps in 6. They'd have to win back-to-back to finish this thing in 6. They could absolutely do that. It looks to me more like it's ticketed for 7 at this point. The more games it takes you to win this thing without TJ Oshie, the worse off you're obviously going to be. My level of concern, and I'm able to look at this thing in a vacuum, there's different conversations we can have about the Stanley Cup last year and whether or not it'll cushion the blow. I'm able to separate that. Just looking at this series in and of itself, first round series, you should win. You made the decision to not have Barry Trotz be your head coach, to go to Todd Reirden. This is a different team. This is a different thing now. So I'm looking at this in and of it as its own entity, in and of itself. I guess my concern after losing 2 straight is probably a 6, maybe a 5.5. But I am certainly more nervous than I was. I don't really get angsty and majorly anxiety ridden until I'm facing elimination. I wait until one bad bounce costs me my season, one bad period costs me months of not being able to see my team before I'm particularly scared. What about you guys? 800-636-1067. As far as this series goes, getting out of the first round, getting to play Barry Trotz and the Islanders in round 2, nothing's happened so far that makes that unlikely. In fact, the way series are kind of designed, this is what should have happened if you just look at it in the way that the home teams have won all 4 games and it's 2-2 and we're in line for as many as 7. What's your level of, I'm not even going to say panic, but I'm going to call it
concern? Anxiety?
Yeah, fear.
Yeah, fear. Okay.
800-636-1067 on G&D.
giving it back on the right wing. Blue line, Orlov. A little bit of room. Guides in, and now the chance for Ovechkin. He scores! Alex Ovechkin hammering away from the top of the left circle. And with 9:25 left in the second, we're tied at one here in game four.
Caps needed that one, got them even in the second period. They dominated. They would give up a final-minute goal in that second stanza. They would lose by a score of 2-1 last night. Ovi tied with Nicholas Backstrom, 4 points in four games for most with the Capitals. Backy's got 3 goals. Ovi's got 2. The other goals in this series from Brooks Orpik, a defenseman, kind of a fluky thing in overtime that worked out. TJ Oshie, he's out, it looks like, for the remainder of the series after being rammed into the boards last night. Lars Eller, who scored an empty net goal, put an asterisk by that one. And Tom Wilson, who scored a huge third-period goal in Game 2 to take a lead that would be given back up to Carolina as they got even before Orpik won the game in overtime. Question for you guys. You've seen all four of these games. Carolina at times outplaying Washington on the road and losing twice. Series shifted to Raleigh, where the Canes were decidedly better in Game 3, dominating the Caps in every phase. Game 4, the Caps played a much more even game but lost, so now it's a 2-2 series, 3 games to go. No Kempney the rest of the playoffs, no Oshie for the foreseeable future. I'm a 6 out of 10 on the concern level. Danny, shockingly, is a 3 out of 10. The roles are reversed a little bit. He's looking at it more from the perspective of, hey, last year they won the Cup, so it's just not that big of a deal. I'm looking at this just as this series in and
this
of itself.
This team, yeah.
In a nutshell, and we'll worry about the fact that they won the Cup if and when this season ends. Let's go to Mike in Gaithersburg. What's going on, dude?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, buddy.
Good.
My level is pretty high. I think next to Ovi and Holtby, Oshie is probably the most important player on the team, not because he scores more goals than many other players, but because of his spark plug, his attitude. And I think losing him and this forecheck that Carolina has, which I've noticed before even the playoffs was awesome, it's got me pretty scared. So I would say I'm an 8 or a 9, although I will tell you that because they won the Stanley Cup last year, I won't be anywhere near as devastated as I would if this had happened a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's common sense. I think everyone agrees with that, which is why I'm trying to separate them, but I understand if people aren't able to as well. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. He says he's more scared, and he points to the Oshie injury, rather,
more so
than the two losses. And I completely agree with that. If it was 2-2 and they were coming back with no Oshie injury and they just lost by a goal last night, I would feel pretty good, actually, getting back home. But everything changed when maybe your hardest-working player, and as he said, when you're 3 or 4 best players. From a skill standpoint, Kuznetsov's better, Backstrom's probably better, Ovi's definitely better. But if you want to talk about a combination, like let's do a graph on an X and Y axis, where the X axis going horizontally is talent, and the Y axis going vertically is how hard you work. The dot for Oshie
is the furthest up to the right.
It's up to the right higher than everyone else's. Let's go to Michael in Fredericksburg. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Hey, I'll be completely honest. I'm not a Caps fan, but I'm an objective hockey fan. I think the unspoken issue here is coaching. I don't have any faith in Reardon being able to coach him through this adversity. There's going to be a little bit of a fatigue factor from, you know, having won the Cup last year. You guys went through a stretch earlier this year where coaching definitely seemed to be lacking before the All-Star break, and I think you're seeing it here. I think Trotz is laughing his ass off right now.
Yeah, I miss Barry Trotz. I mean, look, I'm not making Todd Reardon the bad guy here. I don't know that you can necessarily hang 2-2 on him. If they had Michael Kempney, I think they'd be up in this series. If they didn't lose TJ Oshie, they'd have a better chance to get out of this series. However, I put the goal last night that was scored at the end of the second, and it was the deciding goal and a game-winning goal, on bad coaching decisions. The idea that they weren't just saying, you know what, Jonas Siegenthaler is going to skate with John Carlson and we're going righty and lefty on 3 pairs and this is how we're going to do this.
Instead, it's this jumbled, every shift is different, it seemed like.
You and I hated it when they announced it, and we don't know anything. See, this is the point. I think people sometimes, when we critique a lineup from a manager, we talk about Jay Gruden or Todd Reardon doing something we don't like. It doesn't mean we're trying to say we're smarter. They know more than us, obviously, about their sports. Todd Reirden in his pinky knows more hockey than I do. But knowing more isn't always better, number one. And number two, as we like to say, you can have opinions on what the president does having never sat in the Oval Office before. I hated the idea of trying to mix and match in game and send guys onto the ice with dudes they don't normally skate with. And if you're Brooks Orpik, you might be with three different defensive members of a pair over the course of three shifts. I hate that. I want continuity and momentum. We got to get you some breaking news right now on The Fan.
Breaking sports news on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Yeah, guys, Sarah Sivian, who reports on the Carolina Hurricanes for The Athletic, says that she can confirm there will be no hearing and no suspension for Warren Fogle and his hit, of course, on TJ Oshie last night. So at this point now, we move on and continue to talk about it. But according to the reports now, no hearing or suspension for Warren Fogle. From the Crop MedCap 5-Star Sports Desk, I'm Nick Ashew, Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, that originally came out about 11:30 a.m. We weren't sure, though, because no one had confirmed that it was just kind of one floated report from an NHL reporter who is French and covers the league from afar. But it has now been confirmed, so we know officially, according to at least one reporter that covers the Canes and now a national reporter. We got two people saying, so we're willing to go with it here on The Fan. Warren Fogle will not be suspended for his hit on TJ Oshie. I'm okay with that. I didn't want him to be suspended. I want this remembered, though, when Tom Wilson or Oshie himself or any other Capitals do something very similar.
It's the, again, in general, I don't want guys suspended. But the current precedent where if Tom Wilson blinks or looks at a guy sideways, he gets a dozen games or whatever the hell it is, has to miss weeks and months, then I want that same standard applied.
But to fix that, at some point, you got to start not suspending guys for questionable plays. Let's go to Brian in Chantilly. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You
bet. Here's my take. I think that there are three points here. I can't say that coaching is not an issue. Barry Trotz just seemed to be way more in control and a smarter coach than Reirden. I don't see the motivation there the same. And I don't see any production from their other line. I mean, it seems like every goal has been scored by either Ovechkin or Backstrom or Oshie or their top lines. Last playoff series, last year, they had contributions from all four lines.
Yep.
They were, you know, and they were contributing. The other lines are not doing anything, and they're still making ridiculous penalties at the wrong time.
They've been doing that all year. I don't think that's going away. By the way, to his point on the coaching, it would be easy to sit here and say, well, last year was just this perfect, fun little ride. It's a crazy thing that happened. Barry Trotz benefited like everyone else did from the emotional ride. He did a hell of a job, but you know, the Caps were due. It would be easy to sit here and say that if he wasn't already on to round two with the Islanders. He went to an organization that was not supposed to be playoff bound, probably is going to win the Coach of the Year award again.
He should.
Second time, I believe, in 3 years, he'll win the Jack Adams. And gets not only to the playoffs to play the Penguins and eliminates them.
Smashes them.
Sweeps them and gets to round two like it was nothing. It's a lot harder to not say you miss Barry Trotz watching what his team just did. Kevin in Arlington, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm at a 7.5. You guys have spoken of many things that are different right now in this series from what we saw last year. Clearly, losing both Kempney before the postseason and now Oshie, devastating. You've lost Barry Trotz and Lambert and Korn as part of the coaching package that Reirden was a part of. I like to point out that Reirden had a hell of a lot to do with that, too. But again, there's no doubt that the coaching top to bottom is not as good as it was a year ago. And I don't even blame Todd for that. The other thing is, and you guys spoke of it, the how he's handled the defensive pairings, it's just stupid, okay? From Juice not getting a whole lot of ice time, basically they're worn out. I just feel like
I agree.
He is slumping. Yeah. They're slumping at the moment. They should have had Siegenthaler up. Siegenthaler, I thought, played damn well yesterday. You put him with Orpik. You keep Jensen with Carlson. You keep Orlov and Niskanen together and hope they finally get their stuff together. But, you know, they are dominating us on 5-on-5. If people aren't worried, they really should be. It's just been Not at all like we played after those first two games against Columbus.
I think it's a good call.
It's a good call, buddy.
Thanks,
I think of the Nats bullpen, and we criticize Davey Martinez. There's stuff to criticize him about. But again, when he calls down there in innings 5 through 8, there's no good answer right now. There's a bucket full of hope. You hope Trevor Rosenthal figures it out. You hope Wander Suero has multiple good outings in a row. But there's no good answer before Sean Doolittle. I think there's no good answer without Michael Kempney. I don't necessarily blame anybody. It's just bad luck. It sucks. It's awful that it happened to you, but here we are. So they're all going to look bad when it's kind of an impossible ask to figure out. But I think there's also truth to that. You can also say, I don't like all the jumbling. I don't like in-game, the mixing and matching. Whatever you do, just do that. And I know it gets hard when you have a penalty kill or something else, but man, that just looked disorganized at times.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Les Carpenter covers the Redskins, joins us next. Brent Johnson on the Capitals at 1:30. You are locked into your flagship home for the Nats and the Caps.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.